Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome back, sports fans, to another episode of the Cherry Stripe Podcast, brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network, the number one sports podcast network in Los Angeles. For those listening at home, on the road, in the air, or in the water, do you believe? We have a great show for you guys today. Brad Keller, young gun starting pitcher for the Kansas City Royals, joins the boys, so buckle up, tuck it into your waistband, because here we go. 3, 2, 1. We're back.
We sitting here, I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice.
5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles?
Yes! High fly ball to right field. She is gone! Play clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Gives it to Jenkins for the championship.
He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Bases loaded. Two out.
We're back, baby. It's the Charity Stripe. Hit your free throws, cuz they're free. So 244 coming hot at you guys, and so 243. And I'm flanked on my left and on my right by nobody, because we recorded from quarantine. That's right, we're keeping it safe over here. But you'll hear Alex toss me the rock to Sopolis, and of course, Nikki Snacks Kreida, my co-host, on the mic. And like you heard in the introduction, we got Brad Keller, starting pitcher, Kansas City Royals. And we can't say enough good things about this guy. And yeah, man, we're not going to beat around the bush. Let's jump into this awesome interview. So without further ado, Brad Keller of the Kansas City Royals and the Charity Stripe team. Enjoy. All right, guys, you heard it in the introduction. We got Brad Keller of the Kansas City Royals joining the boys today, starting pitcher. Brad, how you doing over there in sunny Arizona?
Doing well, guys. How about yourselves?
We're doing good. We're all quarantined in separate locations out here in Los Angeles. Usually, I mean, we would love to have you in the studio usually if you were in Los Angeles. Another time when you come pitch for the Angels, hopefully against the Angels in the future, the Dodgers. We usually are in the studio together, but now we're all separate. But we're still doing well. We're managing over here, and we're stoked to have you, man. I think you're our first starting pitcher as a guest. We usually have football guys and basketball guys. I know, and I'm such a Nick and I are baseball junkies at heart. Nick's a lowly Padres fan, and I'm a diehard Red Sox fan. The Royals, man, is such a rich history, great organization, and you kind of had an interesting way about getting there. You weren't drafted by them originally. So if we could start at the tippy top of your young baseball career, right out of high school. What was that like? Yeah. What was the decision like there? Was there a college in play for you, or were you going to go right out of high school no matter what?
Yeah, so that was it was actually a crazy – the whole draft experience was crazy because, I signed to go to Presbyterian College legitimately. I committed 2 days before signing day. I got offered 3 days before signing day, so – offered, committed, 2 days later, signed on signing day to go to Presbyterian College. And that was the fall of my senior year. So, and that was my only Division I offer. And it was like, you know, it's the whole, summer ball, high school, that whole thing was just crazy in itself. Like, yeah. You know, just, you know, trying to, one, I was super young. Like, I didn't even know how to pitch at the time. I was, you know, I just basically threw the ball.
That's so wild. Yeah. How tall were you? Yeah, how big were you? Were you 6'5" still in high school?
Yeah. So I was really tall, and I literally, when I ran it, I looked like a baby giraffe trying to run. Like, that's, I was like so uncoordinated, so unathletic. I was like, I'm not going to go to college. Like, I have zero athletic bone in my body. Basically, I just love sports. Like, I played football and baseball my whole life. To be honest with you, I was much more of a football fan than baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly gave up football my sophomore year of high school, and it was just like, you know, I think, you know, for long-term health, longevity, and all that stuff, I think baseball is kind of the route to take. And so,
yeah.
Fast forward, going into my senior year, we had the likes of Clint Frazier and Travis DeMeritt in my region, who now both are big leaguers, one for the Yankees, the other one for the Tigers. And they were like for sure locked first rounders. So, you know, naturally they brought a lot of scouts with them. And, you know, I got to pitch against them in region play. And we played Clint Frazier first, and it was at our field. And we had to bring a whole set of extra bleachers behind home plate because we expected, like, so many scouts. Like, they had to request for a whole, like,
really
set of bleachers. Yeah, it was ridiculous. And so I just remember it was freezing cold, like, so cold. And I was nervous the whole day because it was like, this dude's literally, like, going to be, like, a top five pick. I think he went, like, fifth overall or whatever. And I was like, you know, I got to sit here. And he leads off, too. So it's not even like you get, like, settled in the game. It's
time,
like, first batter you face. Yeah, it's first batter you face is him. So I ended up throwing really well against him. I struck him out twice.
Nice.
And literally wrecked that game. I was just – going into my senior year, I was just like, okay, like, all I wanted to do was go to the next level. I signed to go to the next level. So at that point, it was like, I'm just going to enjoy the hell out of my senior year. Like, these are my best friends. You know, we've played together for so long. It's like, let's just live it up right now. So all we cared about was winning. Like, that was the only thing that was on our mind. So when the whole, like, pro ball scene got thrown in there, it was like, threw me for a curveball because I was, like, not expecting it at all. I barely signed to go to Division I school. Like, everyone else, like, to get drafted out of high school, I felt like you had to be, like, going to, like, Georgia or Ford or FSU, any of those, like, big-name schools. And so I was like, you know, let's just go out there and compete. And so I ended up, after that game, I had like five or six, cards from all these like pro teams.
Okay.
And I was like, I was thrown off. I was like, there's no way this is true. Like, they probably liked me for a game or whatever. And so my next start, those same five teams were there.
Well,
I was like, okay, like that's weird. And then we went to play Travis at his high school. And when I showed up, I was in the dugout, and like the scouts were coming over, and they were like talking to our head coach, and they're like, "Yeah, we're here to see him too." And I was like, "Dude, my heart dropped." I was like, "What? Like, people are actually here to like see me like play?" Like, it was crazy. And so I ended up. That was like, I don't know, 3 months before the draft. I filled out a ton of like those questionnaires and everything like that, and then I had two in-home visits, one with the Diamondbacks and one with the Indians. And then come around draft day, it was actually, I went to, this is kind of crazy. My very first big league park that I went to was actually Kauffman Stadium, because the two teams that were like the hottest teams on me were the Diamondbacks and the Royals. And so like fast forward to now, it's weird. Like, I mean, I
drafted by one. Now you're with the Royals. Yeah.
Drafted by one. So it's like, do a little stint in Cincinnati. Good for you for getting out of there. And now you're in Kansas City. Now you're in Kansas City.
It's crazy, like the whole experience. Like,
what are those questionnaires, dude? I've never heard of. Like, they ask these questionnaires they have pre-draft.
Yeah. So it's like, it's literally they got all the way down to like, what does your family do? How much did your family make? Like,
Jesus.
I mean, they get like in-depth stuff. Like, they ask about like your personality. I mean, they're just like, they want to get to know you. Like,
fair.
Makes sense.
Which I mean, yeah, I understand, especially, you know, late in the process. Like, they didn't know me at all. You know, I was just, just a guy that kind of just popped up on the radar. So, whenever I got that call, so to draft day, I was like, you know, it was one of those things where I was like, if that happens, it happens. Like, I'm not going to put like all my eggs in like fully bet on this. Like, you know, I was just happy, you know, to be in a situation. And so we were actually on the lake back home with my family, and we were sitting down at lunch, and it's kind of funny because they had to call. I was 17 when I graduated high school, so I was technically not allowed to like negotiate anything. And so they actually had to call my family, my parents, my mom and dad were the ones that were like answering the phone call to be like, all right, yeah, like we'll do that. Like,
did you have an agent at the time?
No, not at all. Oh, wow. So that was another thing. That was, we were literally like, one, we have no idea how the draft process works. Two, we have like no agent, so we have no one representing us. So it was like, you know, I had no idea. Yeah. So me and my parents are just sitting there like talking. Like, we basically were like, yeah, sure, whatever happens. Like,
yeah.
We'll take whatever. And so that's what happened. The Diamondbacks ended up calling me and drafted me in the 8th round, which was crazy. I didn't expect any
of
that.
It's pretty good. I mean, it's pretty good. It's a freaking, it's like the world. It's the world's longest draft.
Yeah. I mean, 40 rounds or whatever.
Yeah, I don't even think the Army used to do that. You know what I'm saying? crazy. It's got to be
crazy to be like, you know, a 17-year-old high schooler not expecting, you know, to be drafted in a major league draft. I mean, you know, you play high school ball with all your friends and the next thing you know, Major League Baseball team's calling you at 17 years old. That's mind blowing.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, I mean, I literally went from just playing ball for fun because I was with my best friends to, all right, this is like my life. Like, exactly. This is where literally I wake up and I play baseball. That's all I have to do for the day. It's like, it is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So were there any coaches in high school that like had come up to you and been like, yo, this is an opportunity for you. Like, this could be on the horizon. Or was it really you kind of just like stumbled into it? Like you were saying, you were a football player first and foremost, right?
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, honestly, so when I made the decision to go straight baseball, it was like my freshman year. I never really pitched until I got to be in about 8th or 9th grade. I was an outfielder. I always knew I had like a good arm. Like, I always loved throwing the ball hard, but it's like, I know where I, like, I going back to the point, I just threw the ball. Like, I didn't know where I was going. Like, just basically hope, you know, you swing and miss at it, you know? But, so it was my freshman year and I got thrown in the fire literally right off the bat, like 2 games in the season. They're like, all right, like, you have a start. And I was like, all right, like, I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I didn't even know what a start was. You know, I didn't know anything. And so I ended up, hilarious story, I didn't get a single out and give up 5 runs in the first inning. And it was to the eventuals, like, state champion. So I'm like, cool about it. But like,
that's fine.
I'm like, dude, like, that was like my first start in high school. And I just got ripped. Like, I didn't even get an out. Like, I'm not going to. This isn't for me, you know? And so for the rest, as the year went on, like, I kept getting thrown in there and I started doing well. And then, at the same time, like, on the football side, it was like, football was starting to become a grind where it was like, work out every day, work out twice a day. It was just like, all right, like, I don't really want to do this. You don't really have to work out twice a day to play baseball. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. You baseball boys are like crazy, yeah. Exactly. You baseball boys like the easier, it's like, the way more chill than football guys.
What position were you playing in football?
Sorry, I just broke up a little bit.
You're good.
No, you're good. What position were you playing in football? What position were you playing in football?
I was tight end, actually. I was I wasn't very fast. Like I said, I wasn't really coordinated, so I would literally run like little 5-yard like turn around, catch the ball, and fall down. So
nice. little digs.
But
yeah. So you go to you get drafted by the D-backs, and they give you that call, and the feeling's amazing. And then it's such a long and winding. It's the road that MLB players have to get to the show. I mean, a guy like, ironically, I got, you know, there's guys that Finnegan on the Royals. It's like the crazy for people like that is to me one of the more underrated things of the last decade. And only the real baseball nerds will really know this one. But Brandon Finnegan coming in and getting drafted that same year and pitching in the World Series is utter. It's bonkers. It is bonkers. So what's the minor league road like, and how many times a day are you like, oh my God, what's going on? Is this ever going to happen?
Oh, the minor leagues, honestly, I mean, you guys, I'm sure you heard the horror stories, but
horror story. Yeah. Me, it's crazy.
It's literally a drag. There's no doubt about it. But yeah. Like, for me, like, I thought it was amazing because I didn't go to college. I literally, you know, signed right out of high school. So I was like, all right, well, you know, I'm 17 years old. I literally got drafted on a Friday, had my draft party / graduation party on Saturday, and I was shipped out to Arizona Sunday morning at like 7 a.m. And so here I am, 17 years old, know nobody, on the opposite end of, you know, United States, absolutely clueless about what's going on. And so basically it was like, I made a decision where it's like, okay, we're either going to make the most out of every moment we have here, because honestly, you don't know when it's going to be done, or we're just going to, like, you know, miss home and not take advantage of this. So when I got to the minor leagues, I was like, this is essentially my college experience. Like, this is going to be, you know, this is how I'm going to live it. And so I ended up meeting, like, some of my best friends right off the bat, like guys I still talk to this day. Most of them are out of baseball, and they're all, you know, continuing on, like, married kids, like, life goes on. But, you know, they all came out of college. So they, like, kind of took me under their wing and, like, showed me the ropes. And, like, I mean, we had our fair share of partying like that. I mean, it's, you know, like I said, it was our college experience.
Yeah, you so need that. Like, you need to get out of it. You totally. I mean, listen, you didn't miss anything in college. All I really learned how to do was smoke a bong. But outside of that, you know, you didn't really miss that much. But you definitely need to, like, let loose a bit, especially if you're a young guy, you know. Going from, like, being at home in high school to just being on the road all the time, and not in, like, massive cities either. It's not like you're going to play in, like, New York City, right? You're going to play in little towns across the nation. So you definitely need those kind of roadies to help you out.
Yeah, so my first stop was Arizona. Then I did well, and this is the best place ever. I went to Missoula, Montana. Literally 17 years old, shipped out to Montana. We don't even have a car. We lived five guys to a two bedroom, one bath house. We biked 2 miles to the field every day, 2 miles there, 2 miles home. We didn't use any of the electricity because we didn't want to pay for anything. Like, we were making like $300 a month. Like, we didn't want to, you know, make or, like, you know, have anything that would cost us extra. So we slept on air mattresses, five air mattresses. We had a fan. Each one of us bought, like, those crappy little, like, box fans, set them in front of our bed. The most expensive thing we had in our house was a $30 table from Walmart, and that was because we had to have a beer pong table. So that was the most expensive thing we had.
College for sure. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it was a crazy experience. Like, I tell a story all the time. One time we were bussing home from Helena, Montana. It was like 4 hour bus ride, and it was the middle of the night, and we get our tire blows on the bus. And so we're literally stranded in the middle of nowhere, Montana, no cell service, no nothing. It's like two in the morning, two or three in the morning, and the next closest bus is 4 hours away. So we're sitting there at 2 in the morning. No one's sleeping. At this point, everyone's just like, fuck it. Like, we're just going to do whatever we got to do. You know, like, we're in the middle of nowhere, and no one's going to, you know. We literally – I don't even think we saw a car the whole time, like, pass by us or anything. So we end up – a bus comes at, like, 6 a.m. We throw all of our stuff on the bus. We drive I think we had an hour left back to Montana or back to Missoula. And we get off, and we had a game that night. And so
– what?
We get in at, like, 7 a.m.
Jesus.
We hop on our bikes. We, you know, we got our luggage and everything, our bags. We bike 2 miles all the way back to our place. We get to our place. We nap for, like, an hour to 2 hours. Wake back up, bike 2 miles back to the field because we had BP in a regular day that day. So that's the minor league grind right there.
Dude, it is literally like, I don't know. I'm not going to fashion myself as, like, some army vet, but, like, this is like the army veteran. This is like the army training for baseball. It's crazy. Like, you're biking with your gear. You're, like, Tour de France with your gear across Montana, which is just, first of all, Montana's got to be pretty beautiful from what I've heard.
Oh, it was gorgeous. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Where we played was actually really pretty. We had an unbelievable background. The University of Montana was there. So it was like, we actually at least had, like, it was populated. So there was stuff there to do. It was just, you know, outside of Missoula, there was nothing.
I can't imagine how many peanut butter sandwiches and how much dip you guys went through in that period.
Sure, ton of dip, yeah.
Ton, yeah. Just like
our spreads were literally, you know, ham sandwiches, turkey sandwiches, and just like a fruit platter, and, you know. Go get them. You know,
one guy biking through Montana with a food platter. Whoever's got the strongest arm. Oh man, how many years were you in the minors?
I was in the minors for 4 years, so five if you count the half season of me getting drafted.
Yeah. At what point did you start to did the idea of you becoming getting to play in the show kind of come to fruition? At what point do you kind of go, okay, this is about to happen?
Honestly, it was probably I don't know, probably after my high A season, where I was like, okay, like, you know, we can make this work. You know, like, I was starting to enjoy it. I was starting to figure stuff out, I guess, you could say. I was starting to be like, okay, like, I know how to pitch. I know how to navigate a game. I know how to, you know, pitch deep into a game. I know, you know, when I get tired, what to do. But I will tell you, the jump from high A to double A is a big step. Like, low A, yeah, it is a big step. Right. That was probably, honestly, I thought that was a bigger step than double A to the big leagues. I felt like the consistency factor was through the roof. I felt like the hitters in double A knew what they wanted to do. Yeah, they knew what they wanted to do. It wasn't like, you know, sometimes in high A, you navigate 1 through 6, 1 through 7, and you got, you know, kind of a break in the order towards the bottom. It wasn't like that when you got to double A. It felt like it was like every guy was a dog. Every guy was going to put together an AB, and it was like, all right, these guys mean business. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that's why I struggled so much when I got to double A. Like, I was like, all right, you know, I really focus on a few hitters, cause that's what I did in the past. I focus on a few hitters and let my ability to pitch, get the other guys out. And it was like, okay, well, that's not really working out when those guys are getting on base. And now I got to focus on these guys when the bases are loaded, you know. It got to be pretty tough there. So
yeah,
how'd your mental develop? Was that like the biggest learning curve? Because obviously, you know, you're learning to pitch and you're physically coming into your own as a pitcher, but that mental jump, because people forget that double A is harder than triple A. The guys that are hitting in double A are the younger guys, the guys that are about to pop off and come up, versus the guys that are in triple A are kind of more so on the holding pattern between MLB and double A. And if you're not, not really cracking the show, you're going to get sent back down to triple A, and that's what they'll have you until they need to bring you back up. But the young guns are in double A. The best batters are in double A. So what kind of mental adjustments are you making as you're moving, you're switching teams too, which is crazy. Between classes.
No, I think the biggest part of it is mentally. I mean, I think that's what kind of separates, you know, a lot of the pitchers, like, especially, you know, I see it more now in the big leagues than I did then, because like, even then everyone's still trying to figure out like what they want to do, like what kind of pitcher they want to become.
Mm-hmm.
And even the hitters, they want to try to figure out what kind of hitter they are. But what, you know, once you kind of get to the big leagues, you basically know yourself, you know, and then it becomes a mental game. And I think that's the biggest adjustment between double A and the big leagues. Like, I felt like the adjustment between high A and double A was physically, like, these guys are actually, you know, really good. And then it was like, from then on, it was like, all right, who's, you know, stronger mentally and who can, you know, make the adjustments quicker. And that's what I think the biggest jump between those two were. But honestly, like, to answer your question, like, to me, it was like, I basically had to take it, you know, sounds cliche, but I had to take it like pitch by pitch and be like, okay, like, I'm going to execute this pitch, and then we'll worry about what happens after that. You know, if I don't execute this pitch, like, my plan that I had in my head, that's out the window, you know. I'm behind the count or, you know, stuff like that. So I ultimately, for me, I had to take it pitch by pitch.
Dude, if you're thinking pitches down, you know, you're going to hang something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you're going to miss a spot. You're going to, and next thing you know, it's like, instead of thinking two pitches down, you're down a run because the dude's put it over the fence. It's like, that didn't work out, you know?
Yeah.
So fast forward to like your major league debut. You make your major league debut on opening day. I mean, did you ever think that you were going to come in on that first game?
That's crazy.
No. Yeah. No. So hilarious story is I've never been to an opening day before. Like, never.
So first
baseball.
One.
So my first opening day is the day I make my debut, which was like unbelievable. It was like one of the most surreal moments ever. Like, I honestly didn't think I was going to come in the game. I thought, you know, I was going to be like one of the last guys out of the bullpen.
And they bring you in and you strike out the first batter.
Yeah. My first batter I faced got a strike out of the way. It was crazy. The whole experience was crazy. I don't even remember much of it. Even now when I watch it, I'm like, I don't remember any of that. I remember running in because, we had Blaine Boyer on our team who pitched I want to say like 10 years in the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me in BP that day, and he was like, listen, like, if you get in this game, like, he's like, I don't want to say like, don't live in the moment because like, you want to go out there and compete. But he's like, when you cross the bullpen fence and you run all the way to the mound, he's like, take everything as much as you can in, because like, that moment right there is so special.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, like, you know, I can see that. And sure enough, when I get called in, I was like, all right, like, so I'm running in, and I just, like, I remember looking up and, like, seeing the stadium was packed, like, seeing the bright lights. I was like, this is the sickest thing ever. This is the big leagues. Yeah, like, man, I can't believe it. Like, it gives me chills, like, thinking about it now, just because I was like, this is our dream. This is what, like, you know, thousands of dreams, thousands of, like, make-believe games you put in your head. It's like, here we are. We're actually living it out. And then Ned, our skip, said something to me. I don't even remember what he said. And I just remember, like, getting on, just throwing my warm-up pitches. And then after that, I think I just went blackout until the end. And then I saw my family, and then it was like my mom was crying at the end of the game. And I was like, wow, that really just happened. Like, that was really special. So the debut was just it's everything you dreamed of.
That is, yeah. Debuting on opening day is such an electric feeling. I mean, the Royals have such a great fan base too, especially as of late. You know, it was a franchise that for so, when we were growing up as kids, all of us, yeah. I mean, we were they were kind of the laughing stock of the AL Central. Fast forward to when we're in college, all of a sudden they've really built a well-rounded team, and they've rebuilt a fan base, which is most important in baseball.
And they get the championship.
Yeah. They go to back to back. What's the culture like there, you know, nowadays? Because now all of a sudden it's a young team. You got Merrifield, you got Soler, you got a couple young guns. They've done it right again. They kind of have their blueprint. They know how to do things. They lose Moose, obviously, let Hosmer walk and Kane walk. But they're kind of starting to recycle and figure things out. So what's the mood like in Kansas City for you guys right now? Outside of the Corona situation where we're all just kind of sitting stagnant.
Yeah, no, honestly, like, this spring training was different. I think everyone was really excited about this year. You know, we just got hired new manager, Mike Matheny. And, you know, I had Ned the last 2 years, and it was awesome to be under a World Series manager. Like, the culture that they had set in place when I got there, like, we still have Salvi, we still have Gordo, we still have Duffy, like, guys that were part of that team. You know, but even though they'll be the first one to say is like, we need a new culture. We need new, because it's like, if you hold on to the past, it's not going to be, we don't have those same guys. We don't have those same personalities. And so, from what I've been told, like, I've never met, Hosmer or Locane or them, but, you know, from the stories that I told from the other guys, is like, those guys, you know, they were kind of the glue to the culture. And so, you know, when they kind of went their separate ways, it's like, okay, we need to kind of find a new identity. And so when we hired Mike and, you know, hired some other guys, we picked up some free agents. It was like, okay, like, going into this season, I think everyone was pretty pumped. We just came off our second 100-loss season. Everyone was just like, we're over losing. Like, this sucks. Like, it's the worst, showing up to the field every day and, like, getting your ass kicked, basically. It was like, this isn't fun. Like, we're over this. We don't want to do this anymore. So the vibe in the clubhouse this spring training was, like, really good. Everyone was like, I personally felt like we were going to surprise people this year. We had, you know, for the younger guys, we were going into our third season. Like, we have 2 years under our belt, 2 years of learning, 2 years of 100 losses, knowing what that feeling is.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we all know where that was. We all want to be that story, be like, we came from that and here we are now. You know what I mean? So that was kind of our mentality, is like, we're just going to go in, we're going to, you know, change how we go about things. And I think Mike was perfect for it. And it was just super unfortunate with what happened with the Corona. Cause we were having a really good camp and then got shut down. But I mean, it was just I think honestly, even when we come back, whenever that will be, I think we have a really good vibe in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice little segue into like what's going on right now. So you said that you're just kind of posted up in Arizona, not knowing what's next. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said before, it's just like, we literally are just kind of in a holding pattern. We don't know. Whenever they tell us go, we'll be ready. But,
and I don't want to force your hand here, but just from like an outsider perspective, a guy that's like not in the majors, by the way, I don't play Major League Baseball. The
surprise.
from our perspective, it's just like, I mean, it's a little disappointing, you know, and not even as like part of like the press, as like a fan of the game. It's like such a good opportunity for baseball to grab the bull by the horns. Be the only sport right now, and everyone, you know, and just come. I'm on your guys' side. I'm for the players, man, because I see the way the NBA does it, and not to compare or, you know, have other athletes butt heads against each other in other sports, but the NBA has such a star-driven league, and the MLB deserves to be that. It's not football, and this sounds a little crazy, but there's a mask over your helmet in football, and people care about the quarterback, the wide receivers, and the running backs and the skill position players because the DBs just talk so much trash. You're going to know who they are. And unless you're like a sick defensive player, you know, the offensive linemen get lost, and it's just how football works. But baseball deserves that, you know, and it's good to hear that you guys have such a good thing going in the clubhouse. Because I'm like, look, I'm looking at the roster. You bring in Holland. Holland's there again. Rosenthal, a Matheny guy, is there, you know, in the bullpen, right? All of a sudden, and Ian Kennedy's kind of reinvented himself as the closer, which is nice. I'm a big Mondesi fan. I think he just needs to stay.
Oh, dude, he's a freak.
Yeah, he is so fast.
Monty's an absolute freak.
Yeah, man. And then you bring and having Perez back is just, obviously, you know, it's a guy that's won before. But can you speak from a pitcher's standpoint, just the importance of having that gold glove catcher behind the plate as far as, you know, pitch framing goes and all of that? What difference does it really make for you? Because we hear people talk about it, but just, you know, to hear it from a pitcher's mouth and especially having a guy like Salvador there, you know, how much does that really change the vibe for the pitchers?
Yeah, no, that was going to be our biggest addition this year. I mean, not only is his bat and, you know, his leadership skills, but having him behind the plate, like a big target, big strike zone, like gets a lot of strikes. I mean, he's not only that, he's really smart. He knows the game, been around the game forever. Like he knows the hitters, like he knows tendencies. He's played against all these guys. Like he knew he had the, I guess, it factor in catcher. Like, that was going to be huge. Like the last 2 years or last year, not 2 years. Last year we had some young catchers. And so it's not only like young catchers, young pitchers, we're trying to figure it out. It's like, if we had, you know, that veteran presence in one of the two, it was like, okay, like we were going to kind of be set on that side. And so I think that's ultimately where we struggled last year was pitching is like, we didn't really know like late in the game, situations. And I think having Salvi back, like he's been there, he's been through the experience. I think that's the number one thing is like just experiencing it. Like that's the best way to learn is going through it. And so having a guy that's kind of gone through it all, you know, been to the World Series, won a World Series, lost a World Series, been through the heartbreak, been through the, you know, celebrations, like having him go through, I feel like you've seen everything in baseball. And so having him back behind the plate, like, you know, it's nothing like a surprise to him if a situation comes up. So that was one thing we were really most excited about.
Totally. And having Matheny, an ex-catcher also as your skipper is great, you know. And then some of the adjustments you make, because the whole thing is a game of adjustments. You had your rookie year, great. Sophomore year, they kind of adjust to you a little bit. Where are you going now in your adjustments? Like, what adjustments? I don't want to, like, you know, reveal all your cards right here because just FYI, we have a lot of Indians players that listen to the podcast. But I just what kind of adjustments are you making?
Yeah, Lindor calls in all the time.
And cause it's just slight stuff. I mean, I heard, and some of it's just even mental. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, was Joel Hanrahan used to close for the Pirates, right? Anybody, Nick, somebody, you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Sure. Close for the Pirates. I knew someone would have it. He used to close for, and this is such a, just stuck with me because I read this article one time and Joel Hanrahan was talking about how he literally one offseason where he was, you know, a scrub, as people would say, which is crazy considering you made the major leagues, gone from scrub to all-star. It's just he made just the way he carries himself on the mound, the literal way he like looks on the mound changed that all for him. So what kind of slight adjustments are you making in your game to go, okay, number 3 year, you're listed on ESPN as the number two guy behind Duffy. And what kind of adjustments have you made in your game going into year three to kind of solidify yourself as a go-to guy in that rotation?
Yeah. I think, you know, last year, or really the last 2 years, I was just kind of a two pitch mixer, honestly. Like I had a fastball, but I threw two different types of fastball, a forcing that cuts and a sinker. And I have a slider. And so that was kind of the two pitches that I relied on most. And, I feel like, you know, your first year, you can kind of get away with it when guys don't really know who you are. But last year it kind of caught up to me to where I was like, I think that's why I had so many walks. Is like, I was trying to be so fine with everything. Cause I was like, I mean, everyone in the stadium knows what's coming because I only throw two pitches. So it's like, it felt like I had to be like pinpoint with everything. And so, honestly, for me going into this off season, you know, I try to pick up a new pitch. So I had a change up, but like I hardly threw it. So I try to like, you know, not really perfect it, but like, you know, work on my change up. And then I picked up a curveball. I think that was going to be a big help this year, especially like, you know, just kind of like later in the game, don't really show it a whole lot, but like kind of, you know, steal a strike here or there. You know, just kind of give the hitters a different view.
Yeah, mix them up a little bit.
But yeah. So like when I was just going out there throwing, all right, you know, here's a fastball, you know, here's another fastball, guess what's coming, you know, the slider probably, you know what I mean? Like it was, yeah. I was becoming way too predictable. And so I think that's where I was struggling last year. And so I think picking up two new pitches, not really two, but really one, but just kind of, you know, incorporating a changeup a little bit more was going to be a big help going into the season.
Totally. So is that something that, like, have you been working on the curve right now? Like, what are you up to right now to, like, keep yourself sharp for whenever they say, hey, it's go time, here's when we're getting back to it? Like, what's that looked like?
Yeah, so, I mean, me and Mike Montgomery's on our team, and we've been talking quite a bit. He's my catch-play partner right now. It's like, honestly, this sounds terrible, but it's kind of like a blessing in disguise for, like, us. Because it's like, we never get time like this. So like in the off season, you're caught between, cause you want to work on things, but you're also caught between, you want to make sure you're ready for the season.
Yeah,
so
dude,
it's like, you want to make sure you're sharp.
Freaking arm.
Yeah. So, but now it's like, when we got shut down, we were a week away from breaking for the season. So it was like, we were ready. Our arms were conditioned. Everyone was ready. Like I just got done throwing four innings like 2 days before we got shut down. So it was like, you know, we were right there. We were about to, you know, take off. So it's like, okay, we got to kind of, our arms are here. Like our bodies are here. Like we know we can work on stuff full, not really full tilt, but like conditioned already, you know, instead of like, you know, in the off season, we're still trying to condition our arm, condition our body to be back where it was, but also trying to work on stuff. Like most of the time when that happens, you kind of like risk injury a little bit. It's like, well, now it's like our arms are ready. We've been throwing every day. Like we know how to, you know, go about this. So like now it's like the perfect time to be working on stuff. Cause it's like, we're ready, we're here, but we don't have to go out there and compete every fifth day. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, you know, we're basically, I'm throwing, you know, 40 pitch bullpens every, you know, 5 days just to kind of like stay on that track. But it's like, that's perfect because I'm throwing that many pitches, but I can also work on stuff to the point to where it's like, if I throw a bad one, who cares? It's not like he's going to, you know,
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So it's like, this is perfect timing. Like I said, it's unfortunate, but it's kind of a blessing in disguise a little bit.
It's great for a young guy like you trying to implement that new pitch. And like, if you can discuss, what are some of the difficulties in getting that? Like, is it the grip, you know, arm slot? Like, what are the hardest parts about getting that pitch into your repertoire, trusting it mentally, you know? Because like you're saying, you're like fastball, fastball, fastball. And then, you know, kind of, you know, missionary, you know, you know, trying to trust her on top, me on top, her on bottom kind of deal. You know, how do you kind of... Yeah. What are the difficulties in kind of really mixing the curve, mental and physical?
Yeah, no, I mean, it has its own challenge. I mean, I think trust is the number one issue. But I mean, once you kind of get down like the grip and like what feels comfortable when you're throwing, like it gets to the point of just like trusting it. And I think that's the hardest part because it's like it's so foreign and you don't know what to expect. You don't know what to do. It's like, when a hitter gets in there and he sees it for the first time, how is he going to react? Is he going to say it's shit and he's going to, you know, please throw that again, basically? Or is he going to be like, okay, that's a good pitch. Like, I hope he doesn't throw it again. You know what I mean? Like, that's like kind of feedback that we kind of want, but we can't get right now. But
yeah, I was about to say, part of that is like, you need the live thing, right? Yeah, you need to like sneak that curveball past the guy to know that it's working for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what's good about spring training is like, you know, we can get that live, but I mean, right now we can't, but I think, you know, I think it's trust. Honestly, when you're trying to get a new pitch and trying to like, you know, better yourself, you just got to trust that it is going to be better and it's not going to hinder you or it's not going to be, almost setting you back a little bit. So.
Yeah, totally. And you bring up batters and I'll let Nick take this one away because this is his favorite. This is his
I knew this was coming up.
First of all, and I'll tell you why it now has to come because I don't see it. I don't understand. It doesn't compute with me because you're such a nice, you know, easygoing guy. So how does it go from this to Nick's favorite aspect about your game?
So as we've talked about, you made your debut against the White Sox, right?
Yep.
But
yep.
I think a lot of White Sox fans know you from the Tim Anderson incident. So, I mean, let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, like, what goes through a pitcher's mind when, you know, they're trying to intentionally throw out a batter and, you know, the 5-game suspension comes up and all that, you know?
Yeah, no. So, I mean, I think I don't know if y'all saw this, but I was on like the Chicago's like villain list. It got like sent out, like, I don't know, NBC Sports tweeted out. It's actually like the list was LeBron James, Aaron Rodgers,
some good company,
Ryan
man.
Braun, and me, and one hockey player. And I was like,
you surpassed Isaiah Thomas. Good for you.
I was like, that's a pretty good list to be on.
Yeah, yeah, right. Huge sports team and huge sports town to be a villain in. That's great.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So no, I mean the whole incident. Okay, so previous years we've had some history with the White Sox. Like, yeah. I was kind of groomed into when I got over here. It was like, okay, like, we don't like the White Sox. It's like, okay, I understand that. Cool. Like, you know, so we had we actually cleared benches the year before for an incident involving the same player. And so some stuff was said, you know, blah, blah. And fast forward the next year when we're playing each other, like, I feel like we've always been competitive with each other. Like, you know, even if we like lose a game, it's always been like a, you know, 4-3 game or something. It's never been like blowout on one side.
Yeah,
like,
and at the end of the day, you're seeing those guys more than anyone in the entire league.
Yeah. Like, we see the White Sox. I feel like every other series, like we were going to open up with them again this year. That was going to be our third straight opening day series against them. Like, it's like, we see them all the time. Like, I know their whole lineup, like back of my hand basically is like, yeah. You know, that's how many times, and we face them in spring training. They're out here too. So it's like, you know, we don't ever get away from them. So, so we're going into that game. You know, it was like first week of April. It was like, I mean, I'm not gonna say a meaningless game because like every game in the big leagues means something.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
like,
yeah. We know, we get it. Like, we're with
the,
you.
The twelfth game of the season doesn't really define if you're gonna make the playoffs or not.
Yeah, it's not 162.
Unless you're a Padres fan, where this guy is like, we're going to the playoffs. Like game like seven, at game 70, he's down my throat about it. Unless you're a Padres fan.
Yeah. So anyway, so I don't even know. This game actually, I was grinding. I was sucking this game. I was like, I was actually throwing really well, like numbers wise, but like, I think I was behind every single hitter. Like, I was getting lucky, honestly.
You could tell, yeah.
And so I was all over the place. I think I had like 5 walks that game too. Mm-hmm. I was all over the place, and comes around like the 4th inning or whatever it is, and runner gets on second base, and you know, I think the at bat, he battled me for like 9 pitches. It was like a long ass AB, I remember. And I was basically in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm not walking him because, you know, he's fast. Like, he's going to steal bases. Like, if he gets on and there's a single, he's probably going to score from first.
He's a 5-2.
I'm like, I'm not walking this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm not going to walk this guy. And so I throw a sinker in and he turns on me. It's a home run. And how he acted afterwards to me and to our whole team was just over the top. It just like, it was like, bro, you hit a homer, congrats, but this wasn't a game 7 homer. This wasn't a playoff homer. This wasn't even a homer to win the game because ultimately we won the game 3-2 in the long run. But that's, you know, that gets kind of lost in the whole transaction of everything. But, you know, it just seemed like at the time it was just a, you know, overdone. April home run, you know, it was just why are you, you know, throwing your bat to the dugout, you know, whatever. But
very aggressive flip too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like, honestly, like we've had beef in the past as far as our teams, and then like that was just like fueling the fire, basically, is what it seemed like. And so, I mean, I was upset because, you know, I was grinding that day, and then it's like I was already pissed off at myself, and then you pull some shit like that. I was just like, all right, like this is bullshit. Like,
kill switch flips.
You know, like whatever. But sorry, y'all there.
Yeah, yeah, we're good, man. We're chilling.
So anyway, that flips us, whatever, and then he like, I don't know. Molly said he said something. I don't know if that's true or not. But anyway, I come in. I'm pissed. Like, I'm hot at the end. I was like, you know, whatever. And I had other guys on the team who's like, yo, like, you know, screw this guy, basically. Because we've had beef in the past. And so, anyway, it comes down to it. It was like we ended up tying the game up. And we – comes around the 6th inning, and he had to know it was coming because it's like,
yeah,
he was leading off the 6th inning, and he was literally a foot from the dirt when I was on my second warm-up pitch. Like, I've never seen anyone get out to the box that fast in my life. And to kind of preface this, like, that was his first hit off me, in his career. He now has two. He had like a little.
Oh yeah, no, trust me. We looked at the stats.
He's Nick, 2 for 17 bro. Nick's got your back, dude. He's got you, man.
Two for 17.
So it's like that. Okay, that was your first hit off me, and you're acting like you own me. And then the entire White Sox fan base is like, "Yo, Tim Anderson's your daddy," and all this shit. And I'm like, look it up, please, like. And then everyone's like, yo, White Sox own the Royals. Like, you guys suck and all this stuff. I was like, yo, we won the game. Like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. Like, it's just hilarious how, like, it all transpired to basically, like, I'm the worst pitcher ever. The White Sox own me. Tim Anderson owns me. Like, all this stuff. And I'm like, you guys really don't, like, care to look at stats, dude. Like, it blows my mind. So
everyone always has a recency bias, right? Like, for everything. It's just everything. The last thing that they saw.
And they love Tim Anderson.
Oh, I know. It's crazy. And the best part about all of it was, so when opening day came around, the White Sox, trust me, I get tagged in everything, either Tim Anderson or White Sox, everything. Like, White Sox fans have like a fascination with tagging my name.
That's great.
That's like Padres fans with Pete Alonso.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. So like when it comes to opening day this year, and obviously we didn't play it, White Sox posted out like a thing that was like, since we're not playing the Royals, let's review our top five games against the Royals. And the number one game was the Tim Anderson game, and they lost. And I was like, everyone was like, yo, like, how's it feel to be the number one game? And like, I'm like, dude, like, we won the game. Like, I don't know. I don't get what you're talking about here. It's like,
they're just fighting over there. They're just in for it's a hockey town and through and through, and they're in for the fights. That's what it is.
It was crazy. And it's like I said, I get tagged in everything. I got called every name under the sun after it happened. Like, I mean, cuss words I didn't even know were a thing. Like, it was crazy. Like, they were just ripping me to shreds. And I was just like, this is great. And then, but it was so funny. It's like when we went back to Chicago, I didn't get booed. I didn't get said anything when I ran out of the mound. Like, nothing happened. And I was like, you know, for them being so like passionate and loyal on social media, there was like nothing at the game. Yeah. I was like, I was expecting full on.
You
like,
wanted it. You were ready for it. Yeah.
Was ready for it. Like, in our bullpen, like, there's a bar in the visitors' bullpen. There's a bar literally like underneath us, like just to the right, to where it's like, there's like a screen. You can't see in it, but they can see you. And I was like, full expecting, because everyone gets drunk down there, and it's like, it's kind of a sick place to watch a game. It's like, I was full expecting people just wearing me out, and there was crickets. One dude said one thing, and it, like, the girl that he was with, like, smacked the shit out of him. Like, I could hear it from the whole thing.
Really? Damn, dude. Yeah. What? Girls don't like the heckling for some reason.
Yeah. So I was like, I was fully expecting everything to come out. Nothing really happened. Some stuff happened on social media. I know, like I said, I get tagged in everything. So apparently he did like a Q&A, and he was like, someone asked him like, how bad do you want to hit a home run off me? And he wrote like, so bad. And everyone's like, everyone tagged me. And was like, yeah, this guy owns you. And I was like, oh my God, like, give it a rest. And then when it came around this year, it's like, the thing is like, they haven't like given up on it. Like, they keep posting the same video over and over and over. And it's like, it happened a year ago. Like, it didn't even happen at the end of the season. It happened at the beginning of the season. Like, so much shit happened during the middle of the season. You could, like, I don't get why you just bring up one moment over and over and over. It's just like, I mean, give up.
I always wonder, like, incidents like this where it's like between two players, like, does it ever get squashed, do you think? Is there ever like a moment where it's like, all right, like, this happened a long time ago, let's just like agree that we're both professionals and major leaguers, and like, let's let bygones be bygones, you know? Like, does that ever come up time where like someone wants to reach out and like make amends, or is that just like,
he does not seem like that kind of guy?
Honestly, I don't know. I have a bunch of buddies on the White Sox, actually, which makes it even more funny. Like, I have a lot of friends over there. And so, I'm friends with them. So like during BP, I go over there and talk to them stuff. Yeah. Like, I'm good friends with their, you know, their first base coach. Like, it's like, I think one player hates me, and I'm like, cool. They're like, I don't care. Like, I'm going to face the White Sox just as I'm going to face any other team. I'm going to face him just like I face any other hitter.
Totally.
Like, I have like a personal vendetta against him. It's like, to me, it's like just another guy I got to get out. You know what I mean? It's not like,
I think the funny thing is like next time he has an at bat against you, obviously like you're just trying to get him out. Right. You strike him out to like anyone watching, any fan is going to be like, oh, he's going for him. Like he's get, you know what I mean? Like he's trying to get under his skin. Like, no, I'm just trying to get him out. But yeah, that's funny.
That's basically what it is. And I ended up facing him again, you know, obviously later in the season. And it's just like everyone, dude, like before the game, like everyone's like, the showdown is back. Like Tim Harrison's going to hit another home run. And I was like, oh my gosh, like guys, it doesn't. No, he's not. Like basically, I'm gonna my job is to get him out. I'm not gonna sit there and be like, oh, I'm gonna lay one in there so he hits another home run and start it all over again. It's like, no, like I'm gonna get him out, and that's how it's gonna be. And I think he went like 1-for-3 that day, like a ground out, short, a strikeout, and then he had like a little blooper. But like, I don't hold a grudge. Like I said, I gotta get him out. He's just like another guy I gotta get out.
Totally.
Just so the fans know. 2-for-17. So that's
we got you, 118. Bro. We're Team Keller. Even if Anderson comes on, and you hear us gas him up, you just know deep down we got you. you were here first, bro.
I think the cool thing about it though is that like a lot of fans don't realize unless they like drop that stat, right? Like when a batter comes in, how many times you see the same guys over the entire season. Like talk about that a little bit about like, you know, like in your own mind, like how many times you faced a guy, if you've never seen a guy before, and just like how that changes the way you're approaching a batter game in, game out.
I think that's I mean, you know, when we face our in the division teams, it's like, you know, it's not like I got to get them out just this time. I got to get them out 20 times throughout this whole season. And it's like, if I do the same sequence by the end of the season, this guy's going to be ripping me. Like I talk to our hitters all the time. And it's like, you know, they'll like lick their chops when we're facing one team and they're like, oh, they got so-and-so pitching day. Like, it's going to be a good day. It's like, or they're like, oh, we got so-and-so. It's like, oh, you know, it's going to be a tough one. Like runs are going to be tough today. It's like, okay. Like they know, hitters know pitchers. Like, it's not like, you know, cause they face so many, it's like, they recognize names. They recognize, you know, what they've done to them. And so like for us to, you know, face the same guys over and over, it's actually tough because it's like, you got to be creative with how you get them out, and you got to be creative with, you know, your sequencing and like, you know, different times in the games to when to throw different pitches. And, you know, obviously scouting reports help out a ton with that, but, you know, we also got to pick to our strength that day. Like you say, guys, you know, rip sliders, or he sucks against sliders and I'm not having my slider that day. It's like, I'm not going to just go up there and throw four of them and walk them. You know what I mean? Like I got to find a way to still get them out, you know? Yeah. So it's like, that's hard. And I think, you know, whenever we play interleague, I think that's what makes it really tough. Like, we don't see those hitters ever. Like, you know, once every 3 years, we'll see the same hitters, you know, like, and so like, see, and plus like the National League, the way National League guys pitch is so different than the way American League guys pitch.
Really?
Cause like, so like National League, they get to face the pitcher, right? So like, you know, they'll
one less professional
guys.
Hitcher. Professional hitter.
There'll be a lot more of fastball dominant pitchers, you know, because like most the way the National League game is played, it's like more of like manufacturing runs versus like American League style is like we have a DH and basically 1 through 9, all of them can hit homers, and it's like you gotta, you know, basically stop a long ball, and so that's where I kind of like it's fun to face those National League teams because they're all like scrappy as hell and they all like, you know, we got to try to manufacture a run before a pitcher gets up basically is what it's like. So just the way the games are played is different.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why it's like it's even more hard to play those international or interleague games because it's like we don't know, one, we don't pitch that way, and two, we don't know these hitters. So
yeah,
but absolutely, and that's what makes the cat and mouse game so much fun. You know, it's like, you know, that's, we're both new to this, like they don't know us, we don't know them, and it's like, let's figure it out.
Yeah.
Have you ever had any at bats as a pitcher?
I actually have,
great question,
I think like 11 or 12.
Wow,
ABs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh dang,
two hits too, so
good for you.
I'm holding that one down.
Nice. Man.
I got one my rookie year against the Pirates. I it's actually a hilarious story. Everyone, so me taking BP, I'm literally not a hitter at all. I suck at hitting. When I was taking BP, like everyone was taking bets, like who would get the like first hit of all the pitchers. And I was dead last on everyone's list. And so, I pitched the second game against the, Pirates in Pittsburgh. And I was facing Joe Musgrove, who's nasty. He's disgusting.
Yeah.
And
he does some heat.
He does. So he threw a fastball So his first AB punched me out on three pitches. I didn't even see any of them. It was like, I wasn't even close.
Given.
And so my second AB, I got up there and I think I was leading off the inning and I was told to take a pitch. So I took the first one, strike, and then he threw me a second fastball. And I remember I was like, oh, that one's up. And that's all I remember in my mind. And I remember like, I went to swing and I remember feeling contact and I thought I pulled the ball. So I like looked down the left field line and out of the corner of my right eye, I see the ball like on the ground through the four hole. And I was like, holy shit. Like I put this ball in play basically. So I like started like running and then the second baseman goes to like dive and misses it. And I was like, no shit. I just got my first hit. So I like started awesome. Like, cause they told me like, once you get a hit, like just kind of like jog. And I was like, all right. So I started jogging. Well, the right fielder comes charging in. Like he's about to like throw me out of
gun you.
And then I started like sprinting to first base. I probably looked so dumb when I was running, but it was like,
the giraffe comes like back, head. Buddy, and you're just like gunning yeah, exactly. it down the line.
I'm
yeah,
awesome. Everywhere. I was just booking it, but yeah. And then someone walked, and I got to second base, and then Gordo hit a single, and I scored from second base.
Nice.
When I'm rounding third, I'm really close to our third base coach at the time. He's like, you gotta fucking go. Like, there's a throw coming. So I'm like full on sprinting. And like fully expecting like to slide or something, and I end up scoring. I turn around and look, and the ball's like at the cutoff, man, in like center field. And anyway, we end up scoring quite a few runs. And I come back in, or our third base comes in, and he's just laughing. He's like, "Yeah, did you like that?" He's like, "I was like, what are you talking about? I thought there was gonna be a throw." And he's like, "Yeah, I just wanted to see you run a little bit." And I was like, "What the fuck?" I was like, "It was, such a baseball, it was so high."
Such a good baseball thing to like dick around like that in the middle of the game.
He's like, "I just wanted to see you run a little bit," and I was like, "That's not cool." I mean, it's like it was so humid. It was a night in Pittsburgh, it was so hot, and I was like absolutely drained after that. But yeah, and then my second hit was last year. Yeah, seriously, like, that's not cool. Last year I was actually at home against Atlanta, back in my hometown, and
that's
I got
cool.
a hit off of Julio Teheran, awesome. which was sick. Yeah,
he's pretty
of,
good. He's
like
a decent pitcher.
250 people there. It was sick. Yeah, yeah.
Teheran's yeah, he's a good been, pitcher. He's had some nice years.
Yeah, you used to go to you used to go to old Turner Field when you were growing up?
Oh yeah, that's basically my childhood. So I literally had from probably like 5 or 6 year old to like 10 years old, I had every single birthday party at Turner Field. So I was I was like a staple at Turner Field, and then like last year I got to go back.
Tellers are coming into town, baby. Here we go.
So I actually got to they changed around the rotation a little bit so I could pitch back in Atlanta, which was
that's
really cool.
That's
special,
nice,
yeah.
Man. Fuck yeah.
So we had an off day there. I got to hang out with my family back home for an off day, and then I pitched the last game there, and I like no lie, I had like 250 people there. It was crazy.
Everybody,
it was one of the coolest.
Everybody rolls
through. I'm from a really small hometown. Like, my entire town was there. And when I went back this offseason back home, everyone was like, yo, I was at the game. Like, people I haven't talked to or haven't seen forever.
That's awesome.
Like, it was really cool to see, like, a town kind of rally after that. It was really special.
That's so cool. I'm really glad that, you know, you got the opportunity to get those at-bats because, like, now the DH might be universal, I mean, especially this season. So there might not be any more pitches hitting ever again, you know?
I know. Yeah, that's gonna be
crazy.
Lucky ones.
I'm into it. A lot more home runs. You don't have to verbally say that just for the four of us to know. You can nod your head, shake your head, yes or no. Is there something up with the ball?
Yeah, I think so. But,
okay, just reveal it.
Verlander said it. Verlander said it.
Okay, yeah, we're fair game. If Verlander says it, we're chilling.
Yeah, I mean it was so like in 18. So I throw a sinker, and it's like in 18, I felt like the ball was moving like so well. And then last year is like, I could not throw a sinker to save my life. And it's like, it just makes sense. Cause like, if you look back, like in 18, a lot of the sinker ballers had success. And then 19, all the like four seam spin rate guys had success. Mm-hmm. And it's like the balls are designed to have backspin, like home runs, you generate home runs through backspin. So it's like four seamer guys that can like spin rate it back at the top of the zone. You know, that's my opinion, but I don't want to get in trouble.
No, you're good. We'll cut it off. We'll cut it off at that. We won't kick that around the news. Speaking of like other pitchers, and some batters, real quick for you, a couple more for you. Some batters, man. What's it like? You got a guy. You go up against a guy like Trout, against Pujols, and like you know, I know it's like business as usual, just another batter. Mm-hmm. But when you kind of come back into the dugout, what's that feeling like going, is there a kind of like a geek out feeling going, wow, like pitching against Pujols, that's got to be pretty sick.
Yeah. So that's funny you bring that up. That the pitching against Pujols was my, I'm here type of moment. You know what I mean? Like, was one of those where I was like, holy shit, this is the big leagues. You know what I mean? So, yeah. I was coming out of the bullpen. It was like my third or fourth outing, in the big leagues, and we had the Angels at home.
Mm-hmm.
And, I came out of the bullpen. Mike Trout was on second base and Pujols was up. And at this point I hadn't given up a run in the big leagues yet. So I was like, I was actually doing pretty well. Nice. And I throw my warm up pitches and I get on the mound and I like come set and I, you know, wait for the hitter and I see Pujols get in there and I see him do his like little shimmy thing. And I literally had to step off because I was like, holy shit. Like I've seen this guy do this so many times on TV. I played as him in video games. I've seen him,
yeah,
you know,
man,
all over baseball. And here I am 60 feet away from him and having him throw a pitch and hopefully he doesn't hit it.
Yeah.
It was like one of those like moments where I was like, damn, like this is really happening. Like the, I can't believe this. And then I remember I looked at second base and Mike Trout standing right there and I was like,
yeah, the best player.
I was like, what the hell did I get myself into? What am I doing?
The best two hitters the last two decades are right in between. Yeah. That's gotta be, I mean, listen, it's, you know, we had Craig Elo on the show. He's the guy that guarded MJ on the shot. And it's more so when you're in those situations, like, holy shit, like I've made it to a point where I'm guarding Michael Jordan consistently. Holy shit, I made it to a point where, yeah, I'm guarding Pujols.
It's crazy.
But we all know that little freaking like tuck of the jersey that Pujols does. And then I pictured it as a kid, dude. He settles in with the bat, just that one motion.
Yeah.
I'm like, thank God my head's not the ball. That guy would just smack me. Yeah. Ned Stark me.
It was crazy.
To another dimension.
It was so cool.
Yeah.
And my second moment was coming in Fenway. That was coming out of the bullpen.
That's
Josh, Fenway.
That's his team.
Yeah.
Cool, man. It's cool.
Yeah, I mean, that was
Fenway Park is
that was like the Mecca. You know what I mean? That's baseball. Like,
yeah,
if you don't love Fenway, it's like something's wrong with you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy. It was like I came in the eighth inning, they were singing Sweet Caroline and I just had chills like the whole time. I was like, this is the craziest moment ever.
That's awesome.
It was so special.
It's,
yeah.
I mean, that stadium, but, Nick and Toss, have you guys ever been to Fenway?
I have not, unfortunately.
I have.
You have, Toss? I mean, it's me.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's unreal.
I mean, and we've watched, like, I went to Dodger Stadium opening day last year in full Red Sox gear after we beat them. The last two games I'd gone to were the game-winning World Series game we had against the Dodgers. I say we. I'm sure, like, you know, talking to a player, it's got to be pretty funny. And then the opening day, and it's a sea of blue. Those fans are nuts, and I'm in full red.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Fenway Park, and if you ever get a chance, Brad, to go as just like as a fan, you know, when you're not pitching or something,
yeah.
Sox Yankees at Fenway Park is in the right field bleachers where the Yankee fans come, because that's like the cheapest ticket for them to travel up, stay the night, and go sit there. And then the Southie Boston guys who just come to get into fights. The whole Chicago thing, it's even worse. They just come for that. That's like, that to me is like the Mecca of baseball right there. But those are two great moments. So kind of segue us into what we always ask guys that come on the show. What's your favorite sports memory? All time, could be you playing, could be you as a kid watching, anything, man. Your favorite absolute number one moment.
I mean, I don't want to be selfish about this, but
dude,
I think me pitching back home in Atlanta was hands down my favorite moment.
That's great. It's amazing.
It was just like, I mean, facing my hometown team I grew up idolizing basically all those players. I mean, growing up in the 90s, watching, you know, Smoltz, Maddox, and Glavin pitch. Like, they're the ones that ultimately got me into pitching.
Yeah.
And here I am, you know, facing guys that I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, but I still root for the Braves. You know, they're my whole town team. I've watched them my whole life. You know?
Thank you.
Like,
I feel like you should be allowed to root for them. Yeah.
Yeah. And so,
you know,
it's
funny you say that, because, like, I know people, you know, who've made it to, like, the NFL, and I ask them, like, are you still a fan of, like, the team that you root for? Like, nah, because, you know what, they didn't give me a chance. And it's like, oh, come on. Like, the business. Like, maybe one day they'll give you a chance. And, like, you know what I mean? Like, hopefully you get to play for the Braves one day. That'd be awesome, you know? That'd
be cool. I mean, that'd kind of be a dream. But, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the Royals. Royals are great.
Barbecue, nice weather.
Yeah. Yeah, Kansas City is phenomenal. I love that place. Cool. I mean, when I first got drafted there, I was like, okay, like middle of the country. It's like, oh, it'd be interesting to see. When I got there, I was like, dude, this place is incredible. I love Kansas City.
Yeah.
Can't wait to get back there.
And I'm sure it was rocking this year at the Super Bowl.
Oh my gosh. We went to the Sunday night game, Packers Chiefs. And dude, I've never gone to, so we went to a few preseason games, but they're nothing like the regular season games.
Is it that crazy?
That place was nuts. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Arrowhead is, I've never been in a stadium that loud before in my life.
Yeah. Really?
You've been to the new Falcon Stadium?
Yeah. Yeah. I've gone to actually a few. I'm a big Georgia fan. So I went to the SEC championships the last few years there. And I went to a few Falcons games, but it's a nice stadium. Don't get me wrong, but it's just like, even though it's a dome, it's not nearly as loud as Arrowhead. I don't know why or what it is.
Those fans are just crazy, man.
They're crazy. They're
awesome. They got the acoustics just right there.
Yeah, they seriously do. Something about that place. And they only have one speaker too, which is really like makes it even more mind blowing. It's like, it's crazy.
Sometimes the best parties are the ones with one speaker though, man. That's how it's done.
Yeah.
Before we let you rock and roll, man, we got one more for you. All right. In today's game, outside of Brad Keller, your top five pitchers right now today in order, if you can give them out.
All right. DeGrom's number one.
Hell yeah.
Garrett Cole's number two.
Okay.
Scherzer's three.
Yeah.
I'd say Flaherty's probably number four. That guy's nasty.
Really?
He shoves against us, too. He shoves against us. Verlander. Verlander's probably five.
I can't argue it.
Nick's huge Flaherty guy.
Yeah.
Oh, are you? Yeah, no, Flaherty's nasty. That guy shoves against us. I would probably – actually, I'd switch Flaherty and Verlander. Flaherty's five, but, like – dude, after watching, I'll tell you what, watching those guys in person versus watching on TV, watching DeGrom throw against us in person was the most, like, mesmerizing I've ever seen pitching. Like, it was the smoothest 99 I've ever seen. It was wherever he wanted it, and it was just disgusting. And it was, like, with ease. And I was like, this guy is unbelievable. I got to watch Max Scherzer absolutely dominate us. Like, I think he punched out like 14 against us right before the All-Star break.
So funny because those guys are they're so different. Like, so Scherzer is like so aggressive and like so much like energy and passion. He just wants to kill you. And DeGrom is like so smooth.
Yeah.
So smooth and so chill and like just.
Yeah.
Bah, bah.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like, I mean, watching those guys and then, Garrett Cole is obviously Garrett Cole. Like, what he did this year is just, I mean, you can't even put those on. In the words, that's just special.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're at a time right now where baseball, like, I feel like, the talent level is through the roof. And I feel like
through the roof,
everything's really young.
Yeah.
I think everyone's super young and it's like really, it's really fun to be a part of this.
Yeah, totally, man. And we're going to be rooting for you. Thank God you're not in the AL East, so I could definitely be pulling for you. The NL West and Toss is a Rangers fan. I could, as long as you're not in the AL East, I got you, brother.
All right.
we're coming to see you when you come to LA.
Oh, totally. Hundo P, you got to let us know. We'll for sure come rip it.
Yeah, for sure, guys.
And you've just given me an amazing excuse to get a Royals hat. I wore my Red Sox hat, but I have like a wall of like 50 hats in my room. And now I have that's an epic excuse to get
one. I love the
one.
Background. I love little smalls right there.
So, yeah, thank you, man. We have a fight right there. Don't ask about the Sonics thing.
Oh, sick.
Yeah, it's like
I'm bummed because not as big of a baseball fan as they are, but my one baseball paraphernalia thing that I have is a Fred McGriff Braves jersey. And I'm bummed that I'm not wearing it. My dad grew up in Atlanta. That's why I have it. But
sick. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. 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 He,
the crime dog.
I have a bunch of college buddies from Georgia too, who are huge Braves fans. Huge.
You know,
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Not as blind as Padres fans, but definitely close. And now that I've dug
in, we're
on the rise. There you go. That's it.
I will say one thing that you should thank the White Sox for is getting Fernando Tatis out of your division because.
Yeah, that guy's a freak.
Exactly.
That guy's a freak. He's nasty. I faced him this during spring training this year and he was pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool, man. That's easy. A lot of young ballers out there and you love to see it. Brad Keller, guys. Yeah. go root for him. Screw the White Sox. Screw Tim Anderson until we get him. And Brad, man, thank you for joining the show, brother. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Brad.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me. Seriously, it was fun.
Awesome.
Take care, man.
See you guys.
Dude's a legend. Enough said. Boom, shakalaka, put it in the books, as they say in baseball. We'll be rooting for him in his new curveball big time. And look at his numbers. Look at him pitch, man. He's had some really good games out there, seriously. And he's a young guy, so we're pulling for this Royals team. They've done it before. They've done it before, and I think in this decade. Yeah, man, it seems so long ago. But anyway, friendly reminder, we're brought to you by our friends at betonline.ag. Go to betonline.ag, use the promo code MYPOD100, and they'll match your deposit as a bonus welcome. Very nice of them. So go do that. Go bet. Go bet on futures. Go bet on the online casino. Go bet and get paid. Win money. It's that simple. The fans out there, drag both feet inbound. Swing on a full count. Rip that puck. Hit that putt. Hit your PKs because they're free. And hit your free throws. Why? Because they are free. We out ya. We love ya.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.